I want to add just a little bit to what Polly was just saying. Okay, you guys, don't start with me. Somebody tell me with a sweatshirt on, I look like a preacher up here. I just wanted to relate an actual experience. Polly and I were seeing a lady one time, and when we were on the fast track to the realized ultimate reality marriage, and they told me that I needed to share all of my feelings and, you know, some things with Polly. And we were on one particular subject, and I didn't want to share it. And this is back when we weren't where we are now, before we realized what Polly just said. But the therapist was a lady, and she and Polly convinced me that it would be to my benefit, to Polly's benefit, and to the benefit of our marriage if I would share exactly how I felt about this particular subject. And a little voice in me is screaming, "Don't do it!" But I let him talk me into it, and so I shared that. And it hurt Polly very badly. And what's the real problem is that it was only a temporary feeling. Not long after that, I didn't feel that way anymore. Polly forgave me for hurting her. She'll never forget it. She will never, never, ever forget what I said. So you have to be careful, because you can say things that will hurt people very badly, and they may forgive you, but they just never be able to forget it. Just never. Okay, tradition two says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. There are no people in Alcoholics Anonymous who govern, and that means that nobody is your boss in AA. There's nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous that can tell you or me what we have to do. There is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself. You know, in all the time Polly and I have been together, over 23 years, never one time has God ever come down and whispered in my ear, "Hey, Dave, here's what I want you to get Polly to do." I don't know how she gets the information. Maybe he talks directly to her, but he doesn't seem to use me very often to get information to her. At least I don't feel that he does. And who could have it any other way? You know, who in Alcoholics Anonymous or which human in the world would you like to have in charge of you? You know, who had absolute authority over you to tell you what you could and couldn't do? We're not going to put up with that. And when you really think about it, who would you like to have ultimate authority over? Who do you want to boss around? Who do you want to jump every time you say jump? You know, it sounds cute for a while. You know, but I have a hard enough time being responsible for me. You know, I don't want to be responsible for you. I don't want to tell you what to do. That's fine for a couple of days, but come on. You know, I don't have time to track you and keep up with you and, you know, and assess your behavior and, you know, see how you're doing this and how you're doing that. You know, I don't have time to, you know, to sit there and wonder how I'm going to, you know, my mood has changed since I told you all that stuff yesterday, and now I want you to do it differently because I'm in a different mood today than I was. It's just crazy. You know, it's just crazy. We neither want to be boss nor do we want to boss anybody around. So in our relationship, and in all our relationships, not just Polly and I, but in all our relationships, God is the boss. Okay? God is the one authority. And we have to learn how to put our egos aside and let God do what he does best. And that's guide his children through their lives. Help His children that ask for His help. You know, God gave us the greatest gift you could possibly imagine, and that is the gift of free will. God says, "You want me to stay out of your life? I'll stay out. No problem. I am at your disposal. It's your call. If you want my help, I'd love to give it to you. I enjoy you, and I'd like for you to enjoy me. But if you want me to stay out, I'll do it." So if God is willing to give me free will, if God is willing to give you free will, who am I to try to take that away from you? It's not my gift to you. It's God's gift to you. Where on earth would I get the idea that I should take that away from you or my wife or anybody? Sometimes you get into relationships and you find that one partner does try to be dominating. And sometimes the other side of that coin, the other partner, allows, even encourages the dominating. One partner tries to be dominating because he has problems with selfishness and self-centeredness. He thinks. And the other partner wants to be dominated because they feel like, if anything goes wrong, it's not my fault. but the truth is, both problems are caused by the same thing, fear. Both problems are caused by fear. You're afraid, okay? The person who likes to control other people is afraid that life, in some way or other, reality, will wander off into a place they're not comfortable, and they want to make sure that they stay in charge so they can keep everything right where they want it. And the person that likes to be dominated or allows themselves to be dominated is afraid to face life. Both sides of the coin, it's the same problem, fear. That's the biggest single problem we have, and all kinds of things disguise themselves as fear, and all kinds of fear are disguised as other things. A lot of times we are angry, I've known a lot of really, really tough guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, we're talking about hard time prison tough guys. And if you really get to know a lot of those guys, they'll tell you that the reason they went up and punched you in the face is because they were scared. It's the only thing they need to do. It's the only thing they need to do. So fear disguises a lot of things. So anyway, the thing we have to remember is that active participation in any kind of relationship by both parties is essential. If both people aren't taking part in the thing, it's not a relationship. You're not dealing with people with whom you have a relationship. You're dealing with acquaintances. And so no partner can assume the position of speaking for the other without first having consulted him or her. And another word for this, at the very least, is courtesy. Courtesy it is very, very important that I be courteous to you. Not for your sake, for my sake. Courtesy is, me being courteous to you is for my sake, for my well-being, not yours. You can say, "See ya." If I treat you badly, where does that leave me? Sitting here alone, my behavior has caused me a lot of pain. I had to learn this the hard way. I am still growing a lot in this area. As Polly was talking about, she would make a suggestion. And if I didn't like it, I'd counter-suggest. But, you get to be very subtle in these things, and you just kind of slip one in when nobody's watching. I have to really try to monitor myself and make sure I stop doing that. And when I catch myself doing it, to just stop it. Just stop it. Especially on crowded freeways, It is easy when somebody turns on a signal light to speed up so they can't get in. This is my lane. This is my lane. That's your lane over there. Stay in it. So how do I deal with that? I just make it a point. It's like a commitment. If I see your signal blinker come on, I slow down and let you in. I don't speed up so you can get in. I slow down and let you in. And just a little personal commitment. It helps me be courteous. We don't always think God personally comes down and sorts out our arguments necessarily. You know, there are times when Polly thinks I am dead wrong about something, and there are times when I'm convinced she is dead wrong about something, and no matter what I do or say, she is not going to see the error of her ways. So what we've learned to do is just say, you could be right, and drop it. You know, leave it alone. Just say, you could be right. There's another tool that we have that we use a lot, and it was given to us by a fellow named Albert Myers, who is now has died and gone to the big meeting in the sky. But you're not going to like this one very much either, and that is you simply say, I'm sorry. I was wrong. I'm sorry I was wrong. Please forgive me. That go a long way sometimes, just to say, I'm sorry. I was wrong. You know, I hope you forgive me. Please forgive me. So our checklist that we have for tradition two is number one. The first one is, do I insist on being the leader? Do I feel like it is my place to govern or be the boss? Or do we strive for equity? And we strive for equity as much as possible. There's an idea that floats around sometimes that says marriage is a 50-50, or relationships in general, is a 50-50 proposition. Well, that's bull. Okay, that's simply not true. You know, sometimes Polly is putting out 80%. She's carrying 80% of the load, and I'm carrying 20. But all I have is 20. I'm putting everything I got out. But today I only have 20. And tomorrow I'll have to carry 75, and she'll only have 25. So, you know, this rigid delineation of whose job it is to do what and 50-50 and all that, I mean, that's a nice thought, but it doesn't work. Do I try to speak for my mate without consulting her? No, I don't. Not as a rule. Do I criticize my mate or do I trust her? I trust Polly with my life. You know, I find that if I am completely trustworthy myself, that removes the biggest single barrier there is to trusting other people. By being trustworthy, it's easier to trust other people. And I have to ask myself, am I absolutely trustworthy? How about me? Am I trustworthy? What if I say this little prayer? God, grant me tomorrow. Treat me tomorrow. God, treat me tomorrow the way I treat others today. Does that make you nervous? Terrifying. Made my sphincter oscillate. Yeah, that's scary when you first hear that. It grows on you, though. Or how about this one? God, help me not do anything today that I can't tell Polly about tonight. Is my ego so strong that I must have credit for more than I do? Am I so insecure that I always have to have praise? Somebody always has to notice my actions and give me praise for everything I do. Do I expect that? Do I feel shortchanged if I don't get it? Do I feel resentful if you don't praise me because I did something like take out the trash? You know, taking out the trash to men is a chore. To women, it's an act of love. Yeah, just take out the trash sometimes without having to be yelled at. They love you for it. Do I do my share in our relationship? And is that my opinion or is that Polly's? If you want to know if I do my share, don't ask me. I'm the wrong guy. Because you know what my answer is going to be. Of course. If you want to know if I do my share, you ask her. you're likely to get a more accurate answer. Does the thought of God being in charge of our relationship cause me any discomfort, or do I like and rely on that idea? I love that idea. I like for my relationships to work really well. You know, and I want to say this, and then we're going to close for lunch, but take full advantage of your safest relationships to deal with some of your character defects. Okay? Take full advantage of that. You find the ones that are safe so that if you blunder, you don't ruin everything. You know, you don't destroy the relationship. You know, Polly says some things to me sometimes, and she told me one time, you know, and I realized this when she told me, you know, she said, "Well, Dave, you know, I guess the reason I'm able to do that," and I don't remember if it was exactly what it was, but she says, "I guess the reason that I feel that I treat you that way sometimes is because I just can't help it, and you're my safest relationship. You know, I know that we are going to be okay, and it's not something I would feel comfortable doing with other people. So if you need to practice a little bit, practice on your safest relationships. You know, take advantage of that. Because what you need to know is that you were wrong. You know, if you're a woman, go home tonight and get out your lipstick. And if you're a man, go home tonight and borrow your wife or your girlfriend's lipstick. And write on your bathroom mirror, put your name. Dave, you are wrong. And just about everything your head tells you about you, until you've been in this recovery program for some time, that'll be true. See, when you come here brand new with your problems, whatever it is, alcoholism or drug addiction or anything, you have to know that those of us sitting here know more about you than you do. It's true. All you know about you is what your head tells you about you. What we know about you is not only we know what your head is telling you, but we also know what's going to happen to you if you can find it within yourself to keep faith with us. We know where you're going. You're going to love it. Let's break for lunch.
Wait.
Ah, excuse me.
Thank you. Where do I sit this? That's your fault.
I'm Polly, alcoholic. Hi, good afternoon. Did everybody have a nice lunch? All right. As you can see, I just sit over there in a daze. You guys understand English. I don't have a clue about Danish. So I am, thank you. I mean, I can't even believe you guys speak so many languages. It's unbelievable. We're going to do tradition three is where we're going to pick up now. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. And this was not necessarily the case when we first came to the rooms, when the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous started in the early years. They used to, if somebody came into the room, they still had a watch. They said, you know, you haven't drank enough. You need to go out and... So it was not just enough to come in because you had a desire to stop drinking. And today, nobody can throw you out of AA. Absolutely nobody. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I've heard a lot of young people who've come into the rooms, and so many of you qualify for that. And I've heard them say in the past, you know, these old-timers would say to me, well, I've spilled more booze than you've drank. And just, you know, words like that. And the good news is that, thank God, no one could throw them out of AA. So what happens in a relationship is the basic requirement for a good relationship is a mutual desire to make it work. Now, there are many reasons that people stay in a relationship other than a mutual desire. There are many reasons that we stay in relationships that are not healthy for us, are not good for us, and one of those is financial security. A lot of times, especially women, and it's not always women, but it seems like it's mostly women, stay in relationships that can be very abusive and harmful because they're so afraid to not have the financial security that they have in the relationship. Emotional security. Some people stay in a relationship because they're terrified to be alone. They just absolutely can't fathom themselves being alone, and their self-worth is so low that they're afraid if they're not in this relationship, nobody will have them. Some people stay in a relationship because of children. They feel like they're trapped. They have to stay here because of children. Taking into consideration, should this be an abusive relationship, that's very harmful to children. Now, I have sponsored women who have been in abusive relationships. I mean relationships that have been dangerous for them to be in. And their reason for staying there was, well, because of the children. And, you know, my reaction to them is, well, what if he ends up killing you? And what does that do to the children? So there's a lot of things that we need to want to be in a relationship. And the same thing that happens on a job. A lot of times, there's all kinds of reasons we stay in abusive jobs with people who are, because we are afraid that there's nothing else better for us, mostly because our self-worth is so low. And sometimes they'll say, well, it's not God's will that I leave. And I kind of like, is it God's will to get killed here? You know, that I don't think that's God's will. So what happens is we need a mutual desire to be in a relationship. Now, I'm not going to say that you're always going to desire to be in a relationship. I'm not talking about a relationship that, you know, there's no perfect relationship, okay? No perfect relationship. And Dave and I both like to say, I don't know of anybody who has a better relationship than we do, but I know lots of people who have as good a relationship as we have. But we have a good relationship. But I can assure you, I don't always like him. I mean, we were talking to Moss today on the way over that I've stopped calling him so many nasty names. I've gotten better about that. But I used to have a lot of names for him. We're on tape. But the ingredient is I have a desire, and Dave has a desire to be in the relationship. So what happens is that when things are less than perfect, we are willing to take the actions to do whatever we can in order to work through whatever problem we have. And what we do is we have lots of tools. I'm in AA and Al-Anon. And Dave went to his first Al-Anon meeting Tuesday night, right here in Denmark. So that was great. So that was a good thing. So we went, you know, so the thing about it is that we have a mutual desire for our relationship to work. So we put a lot of effort. We pick up the tools of the programs and we work them. So let's see what some checklist for the third tradition. Do my actions say that I desire to be in this relationship? One of the things I'd like to say is that we're always talking about love. And I'm not sure alcoholics have a clue what the word love means. If you look love up in the dictionary, it talks that love is an action. If I love you, I show you and act like I love you. It is not love to push somebody in the face and then say, but I love you. That's not love. That's abuse. So what happens is that what we do is, do my actions say that I love Dave? And one of the things that I think is wonderful about Dave and I is we've been here long enough and we've had the programs of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon long enough that our deal is we just can't wait to do things for each other. And what happens is all my life, I've been waiting for you to do it for me. Now, I've come from the South in the United States, so I'm a Southern girl. And Southern girls think men were put on earth to take care of women. And see, my description of happiness was money, men, and mansions. That was happiness. I knew nothing about being able to be a participant, to give to the relationship. I knew nothing about those things. So what we've had to do is we learn, what would you like and what would you like? And we've tried to have that consideration for each other. And by doing that, our relationship has flourished. So we love doing things for each other. So we put love, the action of love, into our relationship. Do I approach my marriage unselfishly, or do I depend on my mate to make me feel good? I used to need you to make me feel good. And I thought, if you treated me really good, you gave me a lot of gifts, you did a lot of things for me, you loved me. I was always needing you to give it to me. And what happened was, is I still was never happy. I had no mutual desire. I was sitting there waiting to get. And in doing so, I never found any kind of happiness in my first marriage. And it wasn't because of what he was doing. It was because of what I wasn't doing. He was trying desperately to make me happy. But see, when we have the disease of alcoholism, there is nothing anybody can do that's enough. There's no way people can make us happy. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says when we're suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing's enough. You can't love us enough. You can't give us enough. You can't do enough. There isn't enough. So there was nothing he could do to make me happy, even though he tried. He tried. Am I committed to, and do I encourage my mate's spiritual, professional, and individual growth? I am committed to my marriage. Commitment. I learned about commitment in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not know about commitment in my first marriage. I was not faithful in my first marriage, emotionally or physically. I was not faithful. All I wanted was what made me feel good. That was all. I often say that alcoholism is the disease of needing to feel good. We're the feel-good people. If it doesn't feel, we're always, how does that feel? And when a lot of times when somebody I'm working with in AA talks about feelings, I'm not interested in your feelings. I am very interested in your actions. Because that feeling is going to pass. So what I need to know is about your actions. But I wasn't. I did not support my mate. I was not committed. And I learned to be committed in AA. And what I learned first about commitment was be committed to a home group. Be committed. I have a home group. It's a third legacy group that meets on Monday night at 7 o'clock in Bellingham, Washington. I am there unless I'm out of town doing some other AA service. I am at my home group no matter what. That's my commitment. And I learned to be committed in AA, and thus I was able to learn to be committed to my husband. Have an AA function sometime. And somebody will say, well, do we have enough people signed up? My always today, I've been around long enough, don't worry about it. Most alcoholics don't know how to commit, so 5 minutes before the function, they decide they're coming. That's the way we do things. But what I've learned to do is commit. Find a home group. Begin to learn about commitment. commitment. And when I got married, I committed to my marriage. I committed to be faithful no matter what. I committed to be faithful. And today, that's what I do. I am committed to my marriage. And I don't mean committed if there's abuse or anything that's going to harm me in any way, but I am committed to my marriage. And in being committed, I began to realize that I want to support my husband. Now, my husband and I say this a lot, Dave and I have nothing in common but AA. That's it. We are way out here. Dave is one of these intellectual people who's always looking for quartz and ozones, and I'm just like, ugh. And I'm always telling him, you give me more information than I ever wanted to know about. And Dave loves to throw a 40-pound pack on his back and walk around on top of mountains and throw ropes up on mountains and climb up mountains. And to me, it's like, oh, my God, you'd mess up my fingernails and skin my knees. And, you know, to me, I don't want that. I want a warm bed and a shower and a potty I sit on. You know, those are the things I want. I don't want to be doing things in the woods. And so we don't, but what has, but you know what? I love it that he loves to do that. I love it. I travel a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous, and today it's not as big a deal because I retired in July, but it used to be a big deal because I worked. Like, I would work about a 50-hour week, and I had a long commute to work, and then I worked plus my AA commitments in California plus being gone on the weekend for an AA commitment. So it was really a sacrifice in our relationship, and Dave supported me. So what we've done is go, whatever passion a person has, go support that and be glad they do it and be happy it makes them happy. And what we've done is we've been able to do that for each other, and that's a gift. Am I able to share my feelings with my partner? Can I listen to my partner's feelings? I do this much better than Dave does. But you know what? He's really gotten good about it. I thought it was really good. We were talking in the car, and Moss said he had read something that, you know, and we read this book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I'm sure that you've seen this book around. And I guess in the book it says, you know, men are to listen for like 20 minutes. We don't need a lot. We just need a little attention. And Dave's learned how to give that to me. So he acts interested. So again, it's not about how you feel, it's how you behave, right? It's our actions that count. So he acts interested. And when he is sailing off onto some big computer geeky thing, I'm just sitting there, I'm really trying. Nothing's going in, but I'm listening. So what I try to do is to remember to always look at my part in the relationship. If I am unhappy, the big and the 12 and 12, it talks about in the 10th step, it is a spiritual axiom. Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. So what I try to do is keep my eyes on my own actions. And in doing so, then Dave and I are not blaming each other for what's wrong with our marriage, and we continue to have a mutual desire to stay in the relationship. Tradition 4.
Those of you who would like to know some of the little terms of endearment that my wife has used on me in the past, see me after the break. Okay, tradition 4 says each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Here is an area where there is, in my experience, an awful lot of abuse in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a place where the bleeding deacons especially take umbrage at what is written in our book. But what this tradition really means for Alcoholics Anonymous and for the other programs who have adopted, in essence, these same traditions, is that your group, your home group, it is important for you to participate in your home group, because your home group should be, I need to avoid words like should, but home groups have the tradition of group conscience, okay? Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. So that means your group is autonomous. It is what you want it to be within the following guidelines. If you decide that you are only going to allow alcoholics to come to your meeting, then that's what's called a closed meeting. I think a few closed meetings are good. If you decide that non-alcoholics can come to your meeting, then that's an open meeting. And an open meeting does not necessarily mean that non-alcoholics get to participate. It just means they can attend. And what the traditions are in your group governing that are that, and these are groups that I know of that allow this to work, and it works well for them. Okay, I know of one group. I know of lots of different sets of groups that do this, but there it is common in some places to have a lot of open meetings. The benefit to open meetings is that you can bring people with you. Okay, many times families are suspicious of other family members that go to AA because they're told they're not allowed to go. See, now, if you're a wife and you drive your husband up to an AA meeting and you see a lot of cute girls going in and you tell her she's not allowed to go, I mean, that's going to make even the most trusting soul a little bit suspicious. You know? So you need to be able to take your wife or your husband. You need to be able to take your grown children and maybe even your small children. Our home group furnishes child support. Okay, child care. If you're a single parent or if you have your children for the weekend or whatever, and you need to come to a meeting but you have your kids, our group furnishes a babysitter. Our meeting is in a church. We have a nursery. You can take your kids to the nursery. And we have a babysitter there who takes care of the kids. And she is paid out of the group collection. So our group pays for that, just so we can make sure that we are as inclusive as we can possibly be. I know of other open meetings where people from Al-Anon are not only are welcome to come, but can speak, can share. If you want to have people from Overeaters Anonymous or NA or wherever, if you want to let them share in your meeting, that's up to you. There's nothing carved in any stone tablet, AA tablet anywhere that says you can't do that. Your group is autonomous. And that's why business meetings are important and so forth. We have some strange ideas that come along in AA. I mean, really weird. We're weird to begin with, but we have some. We had some people in the U.S. a while back that were beating the drum for a gender-neutral big book. Well, you rewrite the big book to make it gender neutral. So I guess they didn't like fellowship. They wanted a personship or something. I don't know. But, if you don't get involved in your group and go to business meetings and all, the next thing you know, you may be reading a gender neutral big book. But if you have an AA group and you let people from, let us say, OA come to your group and share, you probably won't see me in your meeting. I doubt that I'll come to that kind of group. But it's certainly your right to do so if you want to. It's okay with AA if you do that. This tradition says it. And it's a very important tradition. Very important tradition. You know, because otherwise, what are you going to think? The same thing I'm going to think, that we're being dictated to by some bunch of creeps in New York that we never heard of, and we don't care what they say. And you call them up sometimes, and they say, well, you know, we can't tell you what to do. Won't even try. You know, our experience is this, but you do whatever you want to do. So, in terms of relationships, that means each of us, me, both Polly and I, in the case of our marriage, should be autonomous except in matters affecting the other, or our family, or society as a whole. So, each partner should be autonomous except in matters affecting the other partner, other members, such as children or parents, or the relationship as a whole. And another way to say that is that we must become unselfish. Okay? Our thinking must become, how does this affect us, rather than how does this affect me? Now, obviously, if we have children, we have to come to agreement with regard to our children. We have to come to agreement with regards to our parents. But otherwise, if you call Polly and want to know if she can come and speak at your conference, that's entirely up to her. That's her decision. That's not mine. You know, we keep a book, a schedule at home, and if we want to do something together, we have to put it in the book, in the schedule. Otherwise, she's free to do something, and I'm free to do something, if it's important. She doesn't have, you know, I don't want her to come and ask me, is it okay with me if she goes somewhere and speaks at a conference? Of course it's okay with me. You know, I cherish freedom. I cherish my freedom. You know, it is wonderful to feel free and unconstrained, to be able to do what I want to do when I want to do it within the framework of a successful relationship. And because I know how important that is to me, I also know it's just as important to her to have the same freedom. I'm going to build a fence around her. Why would I want to do that? You know, she was free when I met her. You know, considering all the luck I've had managing lives, what could I expect the outcome to be if I tried to manage her life? Look what he did to me. Just think what I could do to her. You know, so this gives us freedom in all the essential matters. You know, she is free to choose her own way to approach her life and her functioning and all this. You know, the only responsibility that freedom carries is that we, neither one of us, can do anything that's going to damage our marriage and our relationship. You know, I mean, that's beyond the boundaries. Autonomy means self-governing. You know, in order to be autonomous, you have to first realize, I have to first realize that I'm God's kid. You know, I am God's kid. I'm not just somebody's mother or father or brother or sister or wife or husband. You know, when I ask God what he would like for me to do one day at a time and then go about trying to do his will the best that I can, this is not going to endanger my relationship. You know, I get up every morning, every single morning. Polly and I pray together out loud. Took a long time to get to that, let me tell you. But we do now. And every morning I say aloud, while we're holding hands, I say the third step prayer. God, we offer ourselves to you to build with us and to do with us as you will. Now, I was talking to a lady just before this, we reconvened today, and I thought, you know, the big hump I had to get over on that was that, you know, I thought, doing God's will, you know, without any, you know, it's just not going to be fun. No, it's not. You know, if I take all the barriers down, you know, I just tear down all the dams and take away all the reservations and just freely say, I'll do whatever your will is for me, I'm going to have to go to Africa and be a missionary or something. You know, I'm going to have to ride around on a bicycle and convert people to Mormonism. You know, doing stuff for God is just can't be fun. But once you get over that hump, you know, how do you get over it? Well, you just keep going along, and gradually, as you go along trying to keep the faith, you realize you have more and more faith. It just happens, you know, because your life keeps getting better and better and better, and your faith keeps getting stronger and stronger. You know, who has faith at first? You know, faith is not a commodity. You can go down and buy it at the local shop. You know, it's something that you have to develop within yourself. You got to have a lot of prayers answered before you have strong faith. And so I finally got over that hump and said, you know, God, we are yours. Do with us whatever you will. And the next thought then that comes to me is, you know, well, I'm God's kid. I belong to God. I gave myself to it. I belong to Him. Which means nothing bad's going to happen to me. Things may happen to me I don't like, but it's only because I don't understand. I have been in the midst of some absolutely tremendous miracles, just bitching and griping every step of the way, because I just knew it, I was getting screwed. I couldn't see it while I was in it, while it was going on. I just couldn't see it. But I get down the road a little further, and I look back, and I think, look at what He did. Can you believe that? Jeez. So I don't have to worry about my relationship. I don't have to worry if I turn her loose to do whatever she wants to do. You know, we belong to God. Nothing's going to happen to us. It's okay, you know. As she said, we're very different, you know. I take the guys I sponsor and do what things that she was talking about. You know, we go backpacking and all that stuff, go skinny dipping in the creek and, you know, or the lake or whatever, and have a great time, you know, a very good spiritual time. You know, and Polly's idea of roughing it is slow room service and black and white TV. Yeah, so, you know. So, allowing your mate to be free just really shouldn't be a stumbling block. You know, we actively encourage each other to just follow our bliss. You know, follow your bliss. Do what makes you happy. And, you know, and you become secure within that after a while. All of this stuff is scary at first because it is completely contrary to the way we feel. You know, what is an alcoholic approach to a relationship? You know, if you love someone very much, let them go free. If they come back of their own free will, they are yours forever. If they don't, hunt them down and kill them. It's the way we think. So, you know, at the same time, neither one of us has the right to commit the other person to something without first getting their permission or talking to them about it, you know. So when it comes to social engagements, if you call and want to know if Polly and I both can come to your conference, she will not say yes until she talks to me first, and vice versa, neither will I. You know, we have to come to agreement on things that affect both of us. So, you know, this tradition says that you know, freedom is the lifeblood of a relationship. You know, because how many of you, you know, when you start feeling a little insecure because you feel like your partner's moving away from you, or your friends, or whatever, your tendency is to grab a hold tighter and tighter and hang on. And there is absolutely nothing that will chase somebody away quicker than that kind of action. And somehow, sometimes, you just can't seem to help it. But it'll kill a relationship quicker than anything else. So the checklist we have for tradition four: do I feel like there are certain ways to do things? And are they my ways? You bet they are. And do I insist on things being done in those ways? Not anymore. Do I always think about how or if my decisions will affect my partner? And if so, do I communicate with my partner and come to agreement? Am I willing to go to any lengths? Her lengths, not mine. Her lengths. To protect the integrity of our relationship. And, You know, once you know the joy of a working, loving relationship, going to any lengths to protect its integrity is just not that big a problem. You'll just do it. You'll just want to do it. Do I carefully avoid injuring my mate emotionally, physically, or spiritually? You bet. You know, if you're in a tight relationship with somebody, you know where the buttons are. You know where your mate's buttons are. You can push them anytime you want to. You know. You know, you really know how to hit below the belt. You know, whether you're male or female, you know. So the question is, do I ever push any of those buttons? Do I ever go up and say, watch this? And if you do that, stop it. How do I deal with my partner's anger regarding something I've done through my autonomy? You know, am I defensive? Oh boy, I used to be. You know, we talked about that earlier. You know, my reaction is to get mad, get defensive, and get mad. Do I try to subdue her with still greater anger? Do I point out previous mistakes that she might have made? Boy, you know, I think I am really, really good about that. You know, I do not do that. You know, I hate it when people do that to me. Oh, man, I hate it. And so I don't do that. You know, it's like, and sometimes we get in the habit of saving things up. You know, we just save and save and save, you know. And just let the, you know. And one of these days, somebody will come in and say, hi, sweetheart. And you'll say, what do you mean by that? Don't try to punish your mate, you know. And the last point is, to what extent do I depend on Polly's language or looks or race or education or age or appearance or job or anything else? To what extent do I depend on any of those things for my own self-esteem? What does Polly have to do to keep my ego fluffed up? Now, and with any luck at all, nothing. Number 5.
Tradition 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Better do one... I'm going to read this from the 12 and 12 because I think it's very important. Better to do one thing well than many badly. The life of our fellowship depends on this principle. The ability of each AA to identify himself with and bring recovery to the newcomer is our gift from God. Passing on this gift to others is our one aim. Sobriety can't be kept unless it is given away. Two things are said here. Each group has but one primary purpose. A lot of times in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you hear the word singleness of purpose. And this is why AAs do better having an AA group. The tradition before says that any group, you know, it's autonomous. They can do pretty much what they want to do as long as it doesn't affect AA as a whole. But what works best is, we're saying, is AA, to, you know, do an AA meeting, do an Al-Anon meeting, do an OA meeting, an NA meeting, have a singleness of purpose. Now, in California, we have some meetings that work really great, and they're called family meetings. And they're AA and Al-Anon meetings. And in those meetings, they have an AA share and an Al-Anon share. So the tradition is talking about singleness of purpose and carrying the message. And the most important thing that we do, and this is in our preamble, is to stay sober and to help another alcoholic. And how do we stay sober? Work the steps. And carry the message to another alcoholic. the gift of the fifth tradition. The fifth tradition as it applies to a relationship. A relationship has but one primary purpose, to love each other and to serve as an expression of God's love. One of the things that I believe that is very important is how I express my love to Dave. One of the things I believe, like carrying the message to another alcoholic, it's important that I carry the message. Because what I do is going to show the other alcoholic how AA works. Now, if people come into the room off the street and they walked in here and we were yelling at each other and carrying on, and that wouldn't be very much of an attraction. That wouldn't be carrying the message. When I'm with Dave, and I don't know if you have had this situation, have you ever been around a couple or a parent or any situation where people were not being kind to each other and how uncomfortable you felt, like they were yelling at each other or and calling each other names and you were sitting there listening to it? It's very uncomfortable. So it's important how I treat Dave, that I treat him with an expression of love, that I carry the message of two alcoholics being married, that when I'm with my grandchildren, my children are too old now, but with my grandchildren, that I'm not standing there yelling at them and hollering at them and making all the people around me uncomfortable because of how I'm treating the children. These are the ways that we carry the message in relationships. One of the things that happens is that part of carrying the message of a marriage is when one of us makes a mistake, to be kind to that other person. And I'm going to use an example. Dave has been far better to me in this area than I've been to him. And it's because I've made more mistakes. And I'm going to give you an example of the kind of mistakes that I've made that he's been very kind about and has been supportive and has carried the message of our relationship and let me know how much he loves me. And a few years back, Dave gave me a piece of Hartmann luggage. That's a very expensive piece of luggage. I don't know if it is in Denmark, but it is in the States. He gave me this piece of luggage, and it was in a box, and he gave it to me for Christmas. Well, what happened was I thought the luggage was out of the box, and I put the box out on the street for the trash. Guess what happened to the luggage? And I was so upset about that. And I went and I told him, and I just knew he was going to be so angry with me for doing that. And he just looked at me and he said, "Polly, you feel so bad about this. There is just nothing I could say. Absolutely. Just try not. It's just luggage. It's just luggage." Other words, instead of yelling and screaming at me and making me feel worse, he comforted me. So part of it is our primary purpose is to love each other and to comfort each other. And sometimes that's hard. You know, sometimes I do it through gritted teeth. You know, if something gets lost or broken or, you know, speeding tickets, you have to spend money that you really don't have. And, well, you know, we'll know better next time. So little things like that happened the other day. So, okay, the checklist. Do we have a primary purpose and do we know what it is? Our primary purpose is to love each other and to try to carry that message that this is how you behave in a marriage. Because of the tools I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, these are the tools that I'm going to demonstrate in my marriage. Do I resort to emotional blackmail? This is something that is, I think, really hard for people like us because our whole childhood is about we've either been raised on guilt or me it was guilt. And it was all, Jesus is just going to, that makes Jesus so unhappy when you do things like that. And I just, you know, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous just sure God wanted to kill me. I just knew he did. I had no idea that God loved me. It was just like I, it seemed like everything I was done. I know today that it was my perception. I heard things that weren't said to me, and I saw things that weren't there. But what happened was, is I was always thinking that if I didn't do thus and such, God wouldn't love me. So consequently, it was that if you don't do thus and such, you don't love me. It was that constant emotional blackmail. Dave and I try never to do that because, like he said in the earlier tradition, we know where each other's buttons are, and it would be easy to harm him. Many, especially women, are very much that do it much more. It's just, and I don't want to sound sexist, but it does. It seems to be women is that we emotionally blackmail men with sex. You know, if you're going to do such and such, well, I might. You know, so. Learn to give for fun and for free. Do I? Do I demand precise equality? One of the things is, I'm just here to tell you right now, I am not a feminist. And because what happens is I don't want to do it 50, some of this stuff 50-50. I just really don't. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do some of the hard work that Dave does. I don't want to mow yards and dig, you know, dig in the dirt. I don't want to do stuff like that. I like to do my things. And so what Dave and I try to do is, like, a lot of times our relationship may be 50-50, but most of the time I'm doing a little bit more somewhere and he's doing a little less and he's doing a little more and I'm doing a little less. So what I like to call it, instead of the 50-50 equality, I like to say we try to find a balance. Just a balance. Do I really understand that my troubles are of my own making? If I'm unhappy in this relationship, I need to look at me. It is not Dave's job to make me happy. It is my job. And most of the time, what I need to be doing as a recovering alcoholic in Al-Anon is get to a meeting, talk to my sponsor, and go help somebody. That's usually what I need to be doing. Do we express God's love in our relationship? One of the things that I'd really like for people to say is that they're a very loving couple. I want to treat my husband with respect because I love being married to Dave. I love it. And I want you to know that I love it. So I want to be sure and treat him with respect. And it makes me feel good. I don't feel good when I'm cutting him down. I feel best when I'm being kind and loving to him. And one of the things that it's not Dave's job to help my self-esteem. That's my job. And sometimes I have, you know, I've been depressed or not feeling well, and he tries to help me. But one of the things that we've learned to do, and we've mostly learned it from the rooms of Al-Anon, is to just say, I'm so sorry you feel like that. And to allow each of our feelings to be our own responsibility. And it's worked much better. That way we stop trying to fix each other. Tradition 6. Oh, you know what? We need to take a break. Okay, we're going to take a 10-15 minute break for a smoke break, okay?
Okay, the next tradition is 6. And tradition 6 says we ought never single-handedly, or I'm sorry, I need to read the AA, the standard tradition. AA group should never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any outside enterprise, related facility, or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. What that tradition really says is that we need to understand that as Alcoholics Anonymous, we only know one thing. We know how to help drunks get and stay sober. That's all we know. And anytime we think we know more than that, we're going to be getting into trouble. I talked this morning about Dr. Benjamin Rush, I talked about the Washingtonians. There was another group called the Emanuel Movement. I talked about the Oxford Group. There are a lot of other groups. They all got started, and many of them were very successful working with alcoholics. The Washingtonians were very successful for a while, but then they forgot what their purpose was, and they became affiliated with political causes and other things, and they lost their way. You know, we don't know how to do anything but get drunk sober and help them stay that way. That's it. So we need never, where are we going to be if we lend our name to some kind of political movement, no matter how good we think it might be? Where are we going to be if we lend our name to a treatment facility? See, if anything happens to us, it is our own fault. But if we are affiliated with some other organization and they are beset by scandal, it rubs off on us. And so we have to make sure that we remember that we are Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a rule that says whenever anybody anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I'm responsible. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And that's all we do. That's all we do. And we need to remember that. See, another thing is when you get affiliated with other organizations, you know, if you went out in the world and you said, hey, I got an idea for a new organization. You know, we're going to have a few million members worldwide, and nobody's going to be in charge. Everybody's going to be a servant. Nobody's going to be a master. Everything is voluntary. Nobody has to pay any dues or fees if they don't want to. Nobody has to do anything if they don't want to. You know, it's just kind of like a little free, loosey-goosey worldwide organization. What do you think about that? They'd lock you up. You know, nobody would predict success for that, you know. And if we become affiliated with other organizations, even if they don't. Even if they don't have any scandal attached to them or any bad qualities or anything, still, it is a lot to ask a normal, rational human that they accept our philosophy and live with it. They don't want to do it. I mean, they're convinced it won't work. So, anyway, that is tradition six. As far as relationships are concerned, the way we apply this to our lives is that our married life is that we ought never single-handedly endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our commitment to each other. And this simply means that I can endorse anything I want to. You know, if I want to be if I want to belong to a certain political party, it's okay. It's my decision. I can do that. If I want to vote for a certain candidate, I can do that. But I can't make Polly do that. That's her decision. I can't say our family belongs to this organization or that party or anything like that. I can't lend our money. You know, we talked about the tradition of unity. That means we have a bank account. Okay? Any income that comes my way goes into our joint bank account. Any income that comes her way goes into our joint bank account. And I can't make any commitments. I can't do anything with our resources unless she agrees that we should do that. And vice versa. Now, I can't loan my friends money and of any size. I mean, you know, we're not talking about $5 for lunch or something, for heaven's sake. But, you know, but I can't make any significant claim on our resources that we haven't talked over and she doesn't agree with. You know, I can't move people into our house without her agreement. You know, I can't say, oh, yeah, come on over and live with us for a while. It'll be okay. We just don't do that, you know. It's also our belief that one partner, like in this case, in our particular case, you know, that I don't need to be overly supportive of Polly, you know, spiritually or emotionally. I don't need to do that. You know, I don't think any one partner should work harder on their spouse's program than they do. I'm not going to work harder on her AA program than she does. You know, and I don't expect her to work harder on mine than I do. You know, I expect to support her, and I expect her to support me. Now, you go through life and hear people say things, well, like you should never have expectations. Well, let me tell you, I have some expectations of her. I absolutely do. I expect her to, you know, among other things, I expect her, of course, to remain faithful. I don't think you can have a successful relationship without that. I expect her to remain sober and a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how we're going to keep this thing together if we don't. You know, when we break faith with AA, if we don't stay active in AA, we know what happens to us. We just slowly are thinking. It just slowly does a U-turn and heads right back where it came from. You know, there's a statement in the book that says, give me that. There's a statement in the book that says, and I quote, "We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on our spiritual condition." Well, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Well, how are you going to maintain your spiritual condition? What do you have to do that? Well, you have to go to meetings. You have to stay active in Alcoholics Anonymous. To do what? Stay sober? No. To keep faith with AA, you have to fulfill the conditions of AA. What are the conditions? You have to share what you found with other people. You have to share. If you want to keep what you have to share it with others. You know, we believe that daily prayer and meditation, you know, we do that together every morning. The book says, asking in your morning meditation what you can do for the man who is still sick. That's how you maintain your spiritual condition. We believe in service. You know, we've said it several times today. Whenever anybody, anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA to be there. We believe that you maintain your spiritual condition by agreeing to help other alcoholics as a sponsor, for example. Step 12 says we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. We believe that commitment is a way to keep your spiritual condition. We continue, you know, step 10 says we continue to take personal inventory. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And finally, you know, be responsible and accountable. You know, be authentic. Live honestly. All of that doesn't come easy. But as I was just saying to somebody, so what? What have you ever gotten in life that was easy or free that was really worth having? Now, that's a little preachy, and that's the end of my sermon, but... you know, you talk about... You know, we don't talk about what God wants us to do. We talk about what God wants us to be. What does God want me to be? And in the other big book, what does God say on more than one occasion? Be not afraid. Be not afraid. So, this tradition is important in protecting the relationship and its unity. And it keeps each one of us responsible for him or herself. And it carries with it the realization that neither one of us can meet all the needs of the other. So we're responsible for taking care of ourselves, but we're enhanced by our association with each other. You know, there's a guy named Khalil Gibran who wrote about marriage in his book, The Prophet. Is anybody familiar with that? And it says, love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone. Let each, excuse me, one of you be alone. even as the strings of a lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts. And stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak and the cypress grow not in each other's shade. So Polly had a sponsor one time who gave us this advice. He said, if you will plant yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous and fulfill the conditions of that program in your lives, one day you'll be like two oak trees. You will be large, you will be big and strong, and your branches will intertwine to the point where one can look up and not tell where one tree begins and the other ends. And that's a little flowery, but it is nevertheless the way we feel. You know, we feel like sometimes it's hard to tell where one of us ends and the other begins. We're very proud of each other, you know, Polly and I. We admire each other. I've learned a lot from her. I don't know what she's learned from me. You'll have to ask her. But, you know, Polly is the kindest, most non-judgmental person that I know. You know, I watch her sponsor a lot of people and work tirelessly on behalf of AA. That's what she does. And I am very proud of her for that. So let's look at the checklist for this. Checklist number one is, do I encourage and support my partner? You know, yes, I do. What is motivating me when I try to be all things to my partner? You know, well, insecurity, self-doubt, you know, fear. Can I hear God's voice when I am screaming at Polly? No. Do I allow my partner the dignity to fail? You bet. Sometimes we must be allowed the dignity to fail. Do I pretend to agree with my partner just to keep things going? Did you know you can't do that? And thinking that you can is delusional. You know, you cannot feign sincerity. There's a movie, Hollywood movie producer of long ago named Sam Goldwyn that said that, you know, sincerity is everything. If you can fake that, you got it made. You can't fool people. You cannot pretend things like you think you can. I cannot pretend things. I've learned that I can't pretend things like I used to. You know, I was talking to a guy sponsor the other day, and he said, well, you know, when she said that, it just really made me mad, but I didn't let her know it. And I said, of course you did. What do you mean you didn't let her know it? She can't help but know it. You can't be around somebody that's angry without knowing they're angry. I don't care how big the plastic smile on their face is. You know, happy energy is a lot different from angry energy. You can put whatever kind of goofy look on your face you want to. You know, you cannot successfully live a lie for any length of time without being found out. You just can't. People don't have to read your mail to know you're full of BS. All they have to do is be around you. You know, you just can't hide that stuff. You can't. So the next one is, do I take responsibility for my own spiritual, emotional, and physical needs? And lastly, am I in this relationship just to feel needed or loved? You know, sometimes that's what motivates us. You know, we just need to be needed. And if that's, you know, what do you do? You know, what do you do? Here I am. I'm all tied up in this relationship because my partner needs me. You know, my whole life is resting on their need for me. What happens when they don't need me anymore? What happens to my life? It's in the toilet. It's over. So, you know, it's if you are in a relationship for anything less than an authentic or honest reason, it's not. It's opinion, but I don't think it's going to work. There, I said it. Number 7.